So here at Parenting Talk Radio, we have a wonderful guest with us here this morning, and I'd like to introduce her to you. Her name is Ann Mitchell. Ann is the CEO and president of the Institute for Social Internet Public Policy. Ann has been involved in internet policy issues from both the legal and the technical side since 1998. In addition to her duties with ISIPP, Ann was also a professor on the faculty at Lincoln Law School of San Jose. Ann is a nationally recognized father's rights attorney and spokesperson and was one of the first father's rights lawyers in the country. Ann is also the founder of DadsRights.org. DadsRights.org, and a leading advocate for children of divorce having a strong relationship with both parents. Ann has also authored a book entitled They're Your Kids Too, The Single Father's Guide to Defending Your Fatherhood in a Broken Family Law System. And you can find that book on Amazon, www.createspace.com. And recently just launched her Men's Divorce Court Seminar Series. And that's available on www.themensdivorcecoach.com. And you can join Ann in a first ever interactive webinar where she will answer your questions and provide you with some very helpful information in regards to divorce cases and divorce in general. Ann, welcome. How are you this morning?
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me back. I almost feel like I don't need to say anything now. That was so comprehensive. Thank you.
Well, that information is all information that you provided me with. So
that's true.
So you're quite welcome. And I want to preface our discussion here this morning by saying to any listeners out there who are fathers, who are either unfortunately contemplating a divorce or are in the throes of a divorce, to continue to listen in, because Ann is going to provide you with some very, very valuable information. This is why we brought Ann back to Parenting Talk Radio, because she's just a wealth of knowledge in regards to divorce proceedings and so on and so forth. So let's start off by just asking you, what inspired and influenced you to become a father's rights attorney way back when?
Wow, that is an excellent question, but can I just start out by saying that if there are any mothers out there listening, I'd also encourage them to stay and listen, because really, and that goes back to actually what influenced me to get involved in this area. You know, really, it's about the kids, and I hate to say it, I am a divorced mother, but it's the reality. It's the women as much as the men who really need to sort of hear how you need to be in divorce as a parent. Because unfortunately, the reality is true, even though the popular press and the women's movement would have you think otherwise, the reality is that women have an incredible amount of power in the family law system, and they are encouraged to do things with that power that pushes the fathers away from the kids, and as a result damages the kids, which, you know, the moms for the most part never even realize. You know, they are so busy sort of exercising their power and their entitlement, and because we as women get this message that children belong with us, we consider that just a given. And so it doesn't even occur to us to think that maybe that's not the right paradigm. So anyway, I just wanted to start out with that to also encourage the mothers who are listening to stay and listen.
Gotcha. Well, that's a great message. Thank you for plugging that in.
Well, and it really does relate to how I first got involved in this issue, which was decades ago. And the way it happened was that I was at my job. I put myself through university by, among other things, being the office manager for a dental practice. And many of our patients were attorneys. And one day, this particular attorney was running very late for her appointment, and she came rushing in, and she was so apologetic, and she said to me, "Oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry I'm so late, but I was in Albany." I was in New York at the time, and that's the state capital. "I was in Albany testifying at a legislative hearing about this new proposed child support legislation." And I, being a newly single mother, said, "Well, of course, you're in favor of it, right?" And she said, "No, this legislation is terrible, and the family law bar is opposed to it. And I asked her why. And she proceeded to tell me. And what she explained to me was that, among other things, the aspect of this proposed legislation was, number one, that it would completely tie the judge's hands. It was, you know, it was back when they were first putting in child support formulas across the country. And the formula being proposed in New York would have made it so that a judge could not have any discrepancy whatsoever to vary from the formula, no matter what, unless they wanted to end up, you know, having it go up and be appealed, which, of course, no judge wants. So that was bad. And then the other particularly heinous aspect of it was that it would have been retroactive, so that, you know, what I was able to sort of see in my mind as she's explaining it to me, that a father, because it's usually a father, especially back then, who would be paying support, you know, could find themselves in a situation where they were completely current on their support. Then mom could go to court and have this new formula applied, and the new amount would have been made retroactive to the first date of the child support order. So a guy that believed he was completely current and was doing the right thing could suddenly find himself thousands of dollars in arrears. And somehow I was able to get, you know, that would be really bad, you know, for the kids, because the guys, the good guys who were really trying to stay current, suddenly find themselves, you know, excuse me, my dog is barking. You know, that would be a really bad situation for them. And so somehow I was able to see that. And then the other thing that happened was that The other thing was that I had just gone through my own divorce. And so as this woman is telling me how awful it would be for all these guys, I'm imagining applying it to my own divorce. Now, I have just been through my own divorce. We have pretty much resolved everything. And yet, I'm thinking, wow, I could destroy my ex-husband if I took him back to court like that. And for a split second, Larry, that was really tempting. He had just had another baby. He had just lost his job. And here I am thinking, wow, I have the power to destroy him. And in the very next moment, I thought, oh, my God, if that did that to me and we're already done with our divorce, what is that going to do to the, you know, thousands of people going through divorce under this? And so I said to this woman, I said, my God, this is awful. Someone has to do something. We have to have a referendum, because I was very politically naive back then, and I thought every state had a referendum. And she said, you know, silly child, we don't have a referendum here. And so I said, well, someone has to do something. Now, mind you, I was just in undergrad. I had not even gone to law school yet. And I said, well, somebody has to do something, and well, I'll do something. And so I very quickly founded a group and took out ads in the sort of local penny saver shopper newspaper. And we ended up going up to Albany and testifying, and I am very proud to say that those really terrible parts of the proposed law were removed. And so that is how I got into it. I'm sorry that was such a long-winded and dog-interrupted accounting of that.
No, that's okay. So what year was that?
That was 1987 or 88.
Okay, so like 25 years ago. Gotcha.
Right, so that's how I got involved in it. And then, even then, I was not sure I was going to go to law school. And then when I did go to law school, I was absolutely positive that I was going to get out of father's rights. You know, I sort of felt like, well, I've done a really good thing. I've done my civic duty. Now I'm going to go to law school, and I'm going to, you know, now I was a single mother at that point, and I'm thinking I'm going to get a really, you know, a big buck job at a big law firm, and we'll never be poor again. And of course, you know, that's not at all what happened, because once you get involved with an issue like this, you can never really turn your back on it, because you know, and you know you can make a difference.
Right, right. You know, we've talked before. Anne was on a couple of months ago, and again, this is why I've brought her back, because I think the story she has to share is so powerful and so informational. But you mentioned, Anne, that in your practice, you've been able to keep 90% of your divorce cases out of the court system.
Absolutely.
And that those are some of your best wins. Share with the listeners how you do that and why you feel those are your best wins on behalf of the families.
That's a really important point, and I'm really glad you brought it up. And in fact, in large part, you know, the new seminars that we're going to be doing, the Men's Divorce Coach, is about that. It's about strategy and you know, how to really get what's most important to you out of your divorce or family law situation. And here's the reason. And I'm sure that your listeners who have been there, you know, will be nodding their heads to this. Men, generally speaking, do not do well in court. There is such a strong bias, even today, you know, for mothers and therefore against fathers in court. I mean, even now in quote-unquote enlightened times, you know, the traditional average parenting time schedule for men is every other weekend and an evening during the week. I mean, that's crazy, right? But that is just so, you know, entrenched in our family law system. And all the way through, you know, that's what lawyers expect. That's what the family court service, social workers expect. That's what the judges expect. It's just the system is so incredibly slanted. And so that's number one. Number two, you know, the adversary system is not where decisions about what your family is going to look like should be. It's an adversarial system by design, and it is not the right place for these sorts of discussions or decisions to happen. Number three, let me come at it this way. By avoiding going to court, typically what that means is some sort of alternative dispute resolution, be it a mediator, be it a, you know, a therapist that you go in and work with together. Even if you can't do it together, even if you just do it by you know, sort of communicating between the lawyers, but not going before the court. Because the reality is, in all those scenarios, you have some input. You are involved in determining what the post-divorce or, you know, post-issue setup is going to look like. When you go to court, you have a stranger who really could not care less about what happens to you once you walk out of their courtroom, deciding some of the most important decisions for your children that will ever happen. You know, and why would you ever put yourself at the mercy of a complete stranger, even if they weren't biased, but the reality is they are biased. So by keeping my guys out of court, you know, through different mechanisms, and I became really good at that. I mean, you know, I know that sounds pretty vain, but, you know, I'm not perfect, but that's one of my strengths is I was very good at keeping my guys out of court and getting them what they really wanted for those reasons.
Gotcha. So would you say that one of the fundamental reasons why the court systems and judges are so biased is because, you know, traditionally they've just learned to believe that children need their mothers and mothers are better parents? Is that like really what's behind this, or is it get more involved in that?
Well, it started out being, you know, that actually many, now I'm talking hundreds of years ago, the kids would often end up with the father because it was the father who really had everything, right? Because women had very few rights at that point. You know, but then after that time and from that time forward, it has always been a function of legal doctrine at one point. There's something called the tender years doctrine, which says that a child of quote unquote tender years should be with the mother because mothers are more nurturing and, you know, all that stuff. And again, that was quite a while ago, but it became so entrenched that even though the doctrine itself, you know, intellectually has been rejected, that is pretty much what the judges on the bench nowadays, you know, the older judges who are mostly men, you know, those are the judges who still came up, if you will, while that was just the conventional wisdom. And of course, as more and more women have gotten onto the bench, well, you know, they're women. So,
right.
And they're women who grew up, as did I, at a time when, you know, women started becoming very aware and socially powered. And, you know, so while we could have as a society become more enlightened about the roles of fathers, and indeed you can see those studies, you know, all over the place. Every week something comes out in praise of fathers and fatherhood. You know, you're for the most part going to get either an older male judge who still has that bias, or a younger male judge who now believes that women have been so horribly kept down by the awful patriarchal, you know, societal norms that they need to give the woman a boost, or a woman who has grown up to believe also that, you know, all men are aggressive and you know, terrible. So, and I know that sounds really radical, but that is kind of the reality, which, again, is another reason that men do much better when they can stay out of court in the family law system,
right,
rather than going to court. There are always exceptions, but honestly, they're 1% to 2%.
So it sounds like almost regardless of who's sitting on the bench, which whether it's an older judge, a younger judge, or a female judge, that 1, 2, 3 strikes, guys are out.
I can't make that as a blanket statement. There are certainly judges of, you know, both gender and all ages that are fair. But for the most part, if you are a father dealing with an issue related to your kids, you do not want to roll the dice by going to court. And frankly, there is no reason to. And of course, the other reason is that going to court is crazy expensive. You know, no one ever wins going to court, you know, completely, because except the lawyers, right? Because the lawyers are the ones that are going to end up getting all that money that should have been set aside for your kids' college or for taking your kids on a vacation or whatever. It's, you know, it's much more cost effective, which is a secondary reason, but also a reason, because most single fathers going through this find themselves really financially strapped.
Right. Right. I know that the answer to this question can range dramatically, but because I've never been through a divorce scenario, I'm curious, what's a ballpark cost for, you know, to go to court and go through a normal divorce proceeding these days? Again, I know that number probably varies greatly from state to state or circumstance to circumstance, but, you know, if you threw out a ballpark range, what would that number be?
All right. Here's what I can tell you. I cannot even begin to tell you what the upper limit can be, but I can absolutely say that for any contested issue, if you're going to go to family court, you will be spending at least $10,000 at a very bare minimum.
Gotcha.
Okay. You know, that's just kind of the reality.
Right.
And it's, you shouldn't be there anyway. I mean, that's the again, you know, and there are many people, you know, about 10 years ago, there was a movement that became much more popular among attorneys, you know, for alternative dispute resolution. There are now, at least, you know, for example, I practice in California, and in the Bay Area, there are attorneys who have joined this organization where they commit that if someone comes to them for a family law matter, they will not go to court. They are, I can't remember the term that they use now. It's not alternative dispute resolution, but it's something else where if you go to one of those lawyers, they will tell you, I don't believe in taking family matters into an adversarial system, and so I am going to keep you out of court. Now, the downside of that particular organization, and I don't know if it's this way in other states, is that they are, part of their commitment is that if you do have to go to court, they won't take you. You have to get another lawyer. And so I never joined that organization because I thought, and I believe quite strongly, in fact, that if I'm representing you and if something comes up that really means you really absolutely have to go to court and can't avoid it, you should still have me with you because I'm the one who knows your case. You shouldn't have to suddenly go out and get a whole new lawyer. So, but my point is that these people, you know, there are lawyers out there now who really do believe that family matters do not belong in the adversarial system.
Gotcha. You know, in a perfect world, a lot of the judges that sit behind the bench in the family court systems would have experienced their own divorce situations or experience something similar to what I did in regards to losing my wife suddenly. And you know, what I found out, what I realized in regards to my situation, which again is distinct from a divorce situation, is that no matter how many books I read, no matter how much therapy and counseling I went to, no matter how much I tried to pay attention to being, a very aware and sensitive father, there is no way that I could put a skirt on.
Well, you could, but that would be a different show.
Yeah, so my point being is that, mothers bring things to a family and to children that fathers do not, and vice versa. If judges could just see that and realize the reality of that, they hopefully would have a better a better concept of these children need their father as much as they need their mother, because the father brings X, although the mother brings Y.
Right, absolutely. And even years ago, there were studies that showed, and I often quoted these in talks because I think people don't really think about it, is that, for example, boys who are raised in father-absent homes are 2 or 3 times more likely to become involved in crime and drugs and, those sorts of, that bad path. Girls, teenage girls who are raised in father-absent homes are 100% more likely to father or to have a child of their own as teenagers. In other words, absolutely, they are more likely to become pregnant as a teenager if their dad isn't around. And, it makes perfect sense because they sort of have this father-shaped hole in their heart and they're looking to fill it, for that male companionship. But, I think I have to say that I agree with you that it would be great if judges themselves have gone through these things. Not that I wish it on anyone, but I'm not sure even there, I'm sure many judges have gone through a divorce and I am not sure it can really inform how they decide things that much. Because if you think about it, the typical judge, on a typical day is probably hearing as many as 20 cases. And even though in a perfect world they would have read all the files ahead of time and they'd know everything, they can't possibly. So they have to make these sort of snap determinations based on, 5 minutes of argument from each side. And they don't even want to be making those decisions. And, it's just never the best place to be, particularly for a right. father. In fact, back when I was practicing in California, we had one judge who was so amazing. She was sort of this radical, tell it like it is. And she, for her courtroom, if a couple was going into her courtroom, she had a video they had to watch first. And that video said, you know what, guys? You don't want me making this decision. You need to figure it out and come up with something acceptable to the two of you, because you're not going to like what I decide. And it's just way better for you to do it. And you know what? I'm going to tell you what, Larry. You know what happened to that judge? She was removed from the family law bench.
Yep. Politics along with religion does not go hand in hand with law.
Here's related to that. If I could just say to your listeners, and in fact, I would invite them. Well, let me just say, this is what I want to say, is if your lawyer is not open to trying to keep you out of court, if you go to your lawyer and say, look, I really want to try and come up with an agreement between me and my ex, can you contact their lawyer and say, look, that's the posture we're taking. If your lawyer is not agreeable to that, if your sense of your lawyer is that they're sort of hedging and saying, oh, that's never going to work, that tells you something about your lawyer. And it could be that they're wanting to run up your bill, but it could also be that a lot of lawyers just really believe that to be a good, effective lawyer and advocate, you have to zealously go into court for your client. But if you are not getting that sort of a sense from your lawyer that they are open to that and know how to do that, then you should consider getting a second opinion. And I'm really serious about that. And let me offer that if any of your listeners, we have a fact sheet on how to find a good lawyer for fathers, and it's free. It's a PDF, and they are welcome to write to us at info@dadsrights.org and ask for that fact sheet, because one of the things that really bothers me is that it you know, family law is one of the easiest areas of law for a brand new lawyer to get into, and it's one of the areas of law that will most impact generations to come. And yet you have lawyers out there who are fresh out of law school or who couldn't cut it in another area, and they're out there hanging out their shingles in family law and destroying families.
Yeah, got it, because they don't have the expertise. They don't have the knowledge, yeah. So that's a great tool, listeners, that Ann just offered in regards to helping you to determine and decide who would be an appropriate lawyer to represent you in your situation, and you can find that again on dadsrights.org. Ann, let's spend the rest of the session here, our interview, talking about your book. I want to have the listeners get a little familiar with your book, which again is entitled "They're Your Kids Too: The Single Father's Guide to Defending Your Fatherhood in a Broken Family Law System." Tell the listeners, how's the book structured for starters?
Okay. Well, first let me say, because you very kindly mentioned it's available on CreateSpace, and if they go through the CreateSpace site, I've actually emailed you a discount code, and they can get the book for 50% off, but they need the full link. You can also get it on Amazon. So I just wanted to make that distinction in case they just go straight to createspace.com and then they'll never find it. The book is structured, first of all, it's a very fast read. It's plain English. It is essentially a compilation of all the advice, well, not all the advice, but the predominant advice that I gave to my own clients in my practice about, you know, how best to move forward with your case in order to get what you actually want. And so it's, again, very straightforward. It's a very slim volume. It's not some huge tome that you have to, you know, take weeks to read. And in fact, some people are kind of disappointed by how slim it is. But, you know, it has all the information you actually need. The first half of it is that information. The second half of it is a state-by-state directory of organizations that may be able to help you either to find a lawyer that you can afford. Again, a lot of fathers out there, you know, because now they're supporting two houses and, you know, they're really slammed financially. So a lot of times we get questions about where can I go either to find a lawyer who knows what they're doing or to find a lawyer who is inexpensive or maybe even a legal clinic. So the back half of the book is that directory. The front half of the book, which is, you know, the actual text, is broken up into several chapters, including how to deal with parental alienation, how to deal with allegations, false allegations of abuse, either sexual abuse or otherwise, and also how to deal with and also thwart parental kidnapping. Those are the three really big issues where guys just get completely tripped up, because it's really easy for a mom to, you know, first of all, make that accusation, for example. I mean, it's easy for a dad to do it, too. It's just the reality is it's usually moms who do it. And usually that's when they realize that the divorce is not going the way they want. So they start getting sort of creative. So, yeah, that's pretty much how it's structured. Gotcha. And there are also checklists at the back of the front section that you can either photocopy or tear out in terms of, for example, if you believe that your ex is about to flee with your child, either to another state or out of the country, there's a checklist for the steps you need to take to help ensure that they aren't able to do that, a checklist in case they actually do that, so that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Okay, that's great. So we've spoken quite a bit about what exactly is broken in the court system. Tell the listeners a little bit about what legal rights fathers actually have in regards to divorce and, you know, retaining the right to be with their children and seeing their children like more often than once a week, or, you know, how does that work?
Well, see, that actually is what trips a lot of guys up, because the rights are not delineated in most states. In other words, there is nothing in any law that says a father has a right to X amount of time with his child or anything like that. Some states have written into their law a presumption of joint custody unless it is not in the best interest of the child. But You know, the reality is, first of all, the best interest of the child is a very fuzzy term. And usually, even with that presumption, it's sort of a very soft presumption. And the reality in practice is that many courts, and certainly most lawyers for moms, will argue that it is not in the best interest of the child for the child to be going back and forth, you know, every week or whatever. I mean, so the reality, again, is that there is no delineated right, in fact, for either parent. And the rights, to the extent that they are, you know, written in law, really are supposed to follow the child. So, for example, child support is, in reality, for the child. It is, you know, not for the parent who has primary custody and is receiving the support. And that is one of the reasons that in all states, unless it's changed very recently in a state, which I haven't heard, but I believe it's still the case in all states, that it has been for decades, that a custodial parent cannot waive child support. In other words, if you and I got a divorce, even if I didn't want child support from you, I have no right to decline it. Because it's not for me, it's for the child. And there are a lot of creative ways to get around that, and lots of people do. But my point is, there really are no rights that a father can go into court and stand on. And that is one of the reasons men often get blindsided when they go to court, because they go into court thinking, well, I'm the father, so obviously I have some rights. And they also go into court thinking, for the most part, that court is about fairness. And so they go in there and they just put all their cards on the table because they think they're going to get a fair shake. And then they're stunned when they don't. So I guess really the right question is not so much what rights does the father have, but rather what does the father believe to be the right outcome and how can they get it? And again, that's what my practice was about. That's what the Men's Divorce Coach is about. Is again, sort of, first of all, opening the eyes of these fathers to realize, you know, it's not what you think. You know, this is, you know, you're on the other side of the mirror now, Alice, and this is how it really is, and here's how to deal with that.
And for the listeners' edification, all this information, everything that we're talking about here, to a greater or lesser extent, you share that information on your site, dadsrights.org. Is that correct?
Dadsrights.org is actually in transition right now, but there is a lot of this information on there, but not, you know, there's a lot of general information on there. So, for example, you can go there and look up how to find a lawyer or child support information in a particular state. But the information that I'm giving your listeners right now is in my book and in the seminars and not so much on the site.
Gotcha. Okay.
Can I actually mention something that I'm really excited about, by the way?
No, you can't.
Okay, then I won't.
No, of course.
One of the things with the seminars, and I would actually encourage your listeners to all sign up just to get the seminar information, because even before they might register for the seminar, by which I mean even before they might even have to think about spending money, if they sign up at themensdivorcecoach.com, they will get a lot of really useful information emailed directly to them that, even if they never take the seminar, will be very helpful. At least I think it will. But the exciting thing is that part of the seminar, so I don't even know if you knew this, I'm not sure I told you this, Larry, but years ago I had a television show called Fathers or Parents Too, and we had 32 episodes. They're roughly half-hour episodes, and we are in the process right now of digitizing them and putting them up in a special private area on YouTube. And they are going to, access to those 32 shows is going to be included with the seminars. And ooh, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful and very, very, very potentially informative for dads.
It's very informative because the shows are talk shows and each episode includes guests from every area of, you know, from family court, from the police, from, you know, social workers. So it's, you know, that was the purpose of the show, was to bring these professionals that these dads are going to encounter on the show to have them really talk to the audience about, you know, how to negotiate the family law system.
Gotcha.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Gotcha. No, that's quite all right. No, I'm glad you did. So, again, for the listeners, in regards to what Ann just shared with you on her Men's Divorce Court Seminar Series, the address for that, the link for that is www.themensdivorcecoach.com. And if you register for that in advance, you'll get access to a lot of free information, is what Ann just shared with us.
Right.
And let's close out by just giving some advice to the listeners who are dads who are presently experiencing a divorce or a child custody battle in courts. I mean, you've already given a lot of very, very, very beneficial information in regards to if you can stay out of the courts, stay out of the courts to begin with, and so on and so forth. But what would you leave dads with if they're listening to the show this morning?
What I'd actually like to leave them with is I'd like to give them some hope. And that hope is, I am sure that there are listeners out there right now who are going through situations where they barely get to see their children, or maybe they don't get to see them at all. They are being targeted with parental alienation. Their kids are, you know, maybe not wanting to see them because of the lies that are being told by the other parent. And sometimes it's not even lies. I mean, that's the other thing to recognize, is that sometimes whatever she is saying, that is her reality. She really believes what she's saying. And so as a result, your kids, you're not getting to see your kids. And the hope that I want to give you is kids have a funny way of growing up and leaving home. And when they do, they are usually able to look back and see what the reality is. So if your kids are hearing, you know, your dad doesn't even want to see you, he's a no good so-and-so, blah, 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 you know, have hope that in the very worst case scenario, your kids will eventually grow up, become adults, look back and see, wow, you know, dad never badmouth mom, or wow, dad actually really was trying to spend more time with us. So even if it seems really bleak now, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Very good. Very good. So I'd like to leave the listeners with, again, information about where they can find your book, which is on Amazon. And the title of your book is They're Your Kids Too, The Single Father's Guide to Defending Your Fatherhood in a Broken Family Law System. You can find the book on Amazon. And again, the divorce court seminar is www.themensdivorcecourt.com to register for that series. Anything we can leave the listeners with, Ann, that you think might also be helpful for them in regards to, you know, having hope, and hoping that as time goes on and children do leave the nest, that they'll get to see, you know, hopefully the real dad, the good dad, so to speak.
Yes, yes. The other hope that I can give them, which is even more immediate, is regardless of how bad you think your situation is or it really is, there are things you can do to improve it. There are strategies that you can employ that will make your situation better.
That's great.
Those are what's in the book and what will be in the seminars.
Very good. And thank you so much for joining us here this morning. It was a pleasure to have you and speak with you this morning. Thank you so much. This is Larry Agresto signing.